month.
Good morning, everybody. Two brief announcements before I begin. The first one is a little disability I'm suffering with, which is an impacted wax in my ear. So if I go like this, it's not that I'm trying to mimic Carol Burnett. It's trying to clear my ear so I can not hear the echo in it when I talk. The second is that there's a new publication out called Disaster Medicine and Public Health Preparedness. It's a fairly recent journal that is put together by the AMA. And I left a couple of them on the back, and it's another good way to advance our field and a good venue for the kind of research that you would hear today. So I encourage everybody who doesn't have one of the copies, please pick one up. Feel free to look at it and keep it, and also think about contributing your research to this journal. Today what I'm going to talk about is more of a combination of a think piece about measuring social vulnerability in relationship to hazards and risks, and a little bit of a measurement test. And first I should say that I have no financial relationship to disclose. I'd like to acknowledge some of my colleagues who have worked with me on this project. You can see their names here. Most of them are they're all at Columbia, either at the National Center for Disaster Preparedness or at the Earth Institute's Center for Information and Earth Sciences. So I want to begin first with kind of a basic definition to understand how to measure risk and how to measure vulnerability and what the relationship is of one to the next. So you could begin with a fairly straightforward formula that risk is a function of hazard and vulnerability, in which as each one of those increases, the risk would increase, and that there are things which would reduce the risk, such as adjustments and response systems, and you have to allow for some error. So when we think about risk, we could be talking about death as clearly a major risk from a hazard, economic losses, social disruption, or a failure to recover. And that's something that we generally don't think about when we look at recovery research so much, or even when you look at the Stafford Act and the way that we have organized our federal disaster policy. Much of it is around recovery of place and often not recovery of person. So when you think about failure to recover, it could be at a population level, not only the bricks and mortars, but also the communities themselves. When you look at the hazard, clearly it's going to be dependent, a function of the type of hazard, the duration of the hazard, the force, the magnitude, which are really all exposure mechanisms, how an individual or community, really we're talking at a community level, are exposed to a given hazard. The vulnerability, which I'll be talking a lot more about, can be broken down into some major domains, such as physical vulnerabilities, human vulnerabilities, and structural vulnerabilities. And we're going to go into a little bit more detail on that. The adjustments are really the mitigation, so that you can mitigate your risk or potential poor outcome from a hazard with a number of mechanisms. They could be surveillance mechanisms, early warning mechanisms, land use policies, various building codes, etc. Even having good insurance will obviously mitigate economic losses. And if you take a broader view, sustainable development would clearly be a major mitigating approach or strategy to reducing poor outcomes from the presence of a hazard. Response systems can clearly reduce the risk, various potential risks from a hazard, depending on the capacity of the system, its functionality, and the interorganizational connectedness within the system. Given that a system is not a single entity usually, but composed of many organizations responding, you want to have a thick network of connectedness there. And then the error, obviously, is whatever else is not accounted for in those other terms. So looking at vulnerability alone, one thing when you sort of look across the literature, and this is not just vulnerability as it relates to hazards. This is from the broader literature about social vulnerability from social welfare studies, sociological studies, econometric studies, etc., health services research. You could sort of pretty quickly arrive at some of the key factors that you can think of that would lead to a population's being vulnerable at the individual or population level. There could be psychological factors such as overly dependent populations. That is, they're not independent. They are expecting people to save them. As an aside, one thing that we do at the National Center for Disaster Preparedness is we do a series of annual surveys of the U.S. population's attitudes and behaviors around these kinds of issues. And what we have found is, and it's a pretty durable finding, there's a 20-60-20 split in the population. 20% of the population are leaders when, or at least this is how they represent themselves. If there's a disaster, will I take the lead in essentially trying to respond and look, and others will look to me for help. 60% will look out for themselves and their immediate families, and 20% are dependent upon others or waiting for response systems. So that kind of psychological dependency would represent that 20%. And then you could look at other individual psychological characteristics and attributes such as lack of self-efficacy, fatalism, like it doesn't make a difference what happens, you know, or whatever happens will be. Access to resources is clearly important, social marginalization. Various health indicators will clearly lead to poor outcomes and our major individual vulnerabilities, and then the built environment in which people live. There are community-level variables as well. They could be environmental factors such as wetlands, levees, other mechanisms that are environmental, proximity to heavily forested areas, particularly in Southern California. It could have to do with the communal culture of isolation, distrust, or what's something that's known as acculturative stress, where people over time feel that their culture is not understood by the major culture. And there could be organizational elements at the community level that are poorly organized or that are discriminant. In terms of how they respond or help people recover. And then you could have larger factors of political vulnerability or economic vulnerability where the major economic industry, let's say, in a given area is such that it's not really resilient. For example, if you're in an area that is heavily dependent upon a single sector or an extractive industry like farming or fishing, and you have a hazard that really targets that particular industry or resource, you may have lost the capacity for that community to recover economically for a long time going forward. And then clearly the lack of political will is a major one. So I am certainly not the first to be looking at this, not by a long shot. And there's a woman in South Carolina who has done probably the most work on this over a 30-year period named Susan Cutter, who's a geographer and has really done a considerable amount of path-breaking work. And she's created something called the Social Vulnerability Index, which was designed to use widely available secondary data sources such as census material, collect that, and then she used the principal components analysis to identify the major factors and variables from the census data that would potentially construct this vulnerability index. And the factors included personal wealth, age, the density of the built environment, a single sector economy, housing stock and tenancy, race, ethnicity, and occupation. Many of the factors that we just talked about, but not all of the factors. And that's, I'm going to come back to that later. We decided to try and test some of this model, especially not only, we were trying to test both the reliability and the validity of this model and this index. The reliability in terms of collecting the same kind of data that Cutter and her colleagues have collected, using it for smaller area analyses than she had developed, and then trying to really see whether it is related to potential outcomes. So we collected the similar set of data from five states, New York, Louisiana, Mississippi, Florida, and California. In part, we were trying to find areas of interest that were reasonably high-risk areas for specific natural hazards. And New York, well, because we live there. We ran the same kind of principal component analysis. I kept it at an eigenvalue factor of 0.5 or greater to identify those factors, did a Varimax rotation, created an unweighted summative score, and used Cronbach alpha to test the reliability. Initially, I was really astonished at the low reliability of the findings because I was going within a state. Cutter and her colleagues have taken national data and done this on a national scale, and we were trying to do this state by state. And we realized right away when you look at it and you map it out that a couple of things are going on, and it may be very state-specific or state-dependent. And we decided we wanted to try some weighting strategies to maybe normalize or standardize this. So we tried three different strategies. We tried standardizing by the state means. We stratified the different areas by population density. So like in New York, there's a big upstate-downstate difference. So we did this, the same kind of construction of the scale for downstate and a construction of the scale for upstate to see if it would look different there. And then we also used something called the Gini coefficient, which is a measure of social economic disparities as a way to try and control and weight that. It turns out that the most robust of the strategies was the first, and it's also the easiest, which is standardizing around the state mean. So what happens, though, when we do this is we get, this is one of our reliability tests, is we tried a couple of different ways of doing this. We looked at all of New York and then created the scale, all of Louisiana created the scale, all of Mississippi. Then we tried putting them together. We said, okay, if you put New York, Louisiana, Mississippi together and now take those variables again and create the scale, or if you take all five together, we were trying to see what happens when you change the scale, the scope of creating one of these social vulnerability scales. And number one, the variables that are of interest or import change, and the reliability changes a little bit, but it was the fact that those variables kept on shifting that led us to the notion that it was something for us to pay attention to, that it may be that that vulnerability is local. And for you to do these kind of small area analyses, you have to be able to really look at that sort of local variation, and it may be difficult to create a single scale that could be used on a national level. Still remains to be seen. The other key thing we were wondering about is what's the relationship between vulnerability and outcome? This is sort of the validity element of it, because you could be very vulnerable on one level. And if you think about outcomes, and what we did here, we looked within the standard hazard phases at a couple of different potential outcomes. So if a population is vulnerable in the mitigation phase, they might be unable to prevent the disaster's economic consequences. If they're vulnerable in the response phase, they'll be unable to respond appropriately. If they're vulnerable in the short-term recovery phase, they may be unable to survive or thrive in the short term. And if they're vulnerable for long-term recovery, they'll be unable to return to the community if displaced. So each one of those is different. You could be vulnerable for one, but not the other. In other words, you can have two poor communities, but they're equally poor, but they have really different social vulnerabilities because of a number of the elements and characteristics of those communities. One community may be very vulnerable to not responding, not being able to respond. They won't be able to get out. They don't have cars. They don't have literacy, situational awareness, whatever. They're in harm's way. They're undocumented, whatever it may be. And they are at a higher risk for not surviving the immediate event. But they may be better at being able to recover. Another community, equally poor, different characteristics, may be able to easily survive the initial event, but be unable to recover. So really, this question of what's the outcome drives the question of what's the vulnerability and how to measure it. So to sort of take this and put it into maps, I wanted to just show you as I close two maps that we picked just in one very small area, New Orleans, looking at Orleans Parish. And I'm picking out only two variables here to make it very simple. So first I'm starting out with the proportion of a census block, which is pretty small area, the proportion that is African American out of the total population. And here the darker areas are heavily black. Actually, I'm going to use your pointer, Andy, for just this. Thanks. And what I'd like you to do is take a look at, this is East New Orleans here, this is the Lower Ninth Ward, and this up here is the Lakeview District, right on Lake Pontchartrain, okay? So this means it's very few black, this is heavily black, this is heavily black. The next one is a failure to recover slide. So, whoops. Okay. This is the proportion of addresses in September 2008 divided by the total addresses pre-event. So the higher the number, the more that particular place has deliverable mail, meaning it has recovered. So now what you see is this has not recovered very much, sort of middle level. The Lower Ninth has virtually not at all. And Lakeview, which is a mostly white middle and upper middle class area, has really recovered well. So this is just one illustration of how to use this kind of measuring, moving towards mapping to begin to get a better sense of vulnerability. So just to sum up, when we think about this, the first challenge is really identifying sufficient, valid, reliable data. But clearly, this social vulnerability may be this a local construct requiring different kind of small area techniques rather than picking a single large one size fits all measure. Vulnerability may be specific to the outcome. Testing validity requires enough post-event data, and this is really difficult. There aren't that many major catastrophes or disasters, so it's very hard to validate any of these measures. And lastly, even if I've solved and we've solved all of those above problems, how do you make this useful to planners and to policymakers? What do you do with this piece of information? You show them the maps, you show them the data. Where do you go and take it to the next step? So this is, as I said, more of a conceptual framework and a starting point, and we'll see where it takes us. So thank you very much.
Thank you, David. I have to say, though, I got very concerned about one of the things you said, that recovery can be measured by adequate mail delivery. I'm not sure what my neighborhood has not recovered from, but we have a problem. Okay, so let me...